Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. And opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Today is September the 13th in the year, they say. It is 2016. It is warm afternoon, not terribly hot here in North Carolina. Yesterday was just a beautiful day, but today a little bit warmer, but I'm not complaining about the weather here in North Carolina. I think we've had some of the best weather of all the different places I've visited around the planet. I'll tell you, North Carolina got some good weather. Just want to go over some of the news stories of today. We don't have a guest planned for you today. There's nothing particularly pressing that I think needs to be shared right away. So I'll just go over some of the basic news items that I have shared and others have shared. But I am interested, and I'm looking it up right now, what's going on in Milwaukee since the young black man was killed in Milwaukee and we had a bunch of protests. And I just really haven't heard anything else about it in, I would say, about a week or so, other than the last I heard about the curfew they were going to put in place. I haven't heard anything about in terms of this video being made public, so I'm going to assume that they're still keeping that video close to the vest, so to speak. The public, as far as I can tell, have not seen this video. Now, as I'm looking at the news, I'm in the Google News feed, and I just put in, you know, Milwaukee protests, and not really seeing anything published since mid-August. So it's like that story just dropped off the map, so to speak. And let me see if I can pull up anything else. Let me see. More people obviously have been shot there. That's not too surprising with police shooting people, at least two or three people a day. So, but I'm not seeing anything related to that. Again, I just did another search term, and all of the stories that are pertaining to the unrest in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, all date back to August the 15th. I'm not seeing anything else after that. So I just hope the people are okay up there. I think we got Brother Rob on the line who lives in that area, and perhaps he can give us an update. Brother Rob, do we have you on the line, sir? Area code 414.
Can you hear me?
You're coming in a little bit low, but I heard you.
Oh, is that better?
Yes, that's a lot better. Greetings to you today.
Well, greetings to you. How's it going?
I'm not going to complain too much because I know it's people doing a lot worse than I am. But I knew that, you know, you're a regular listener of the program and you're in that particular area and you've shared some vital information with us in the past. And I was hoping that you would chime in because I just haven't, you know, seen anything else since we last talked about this about a week or so ago. So do you have any updates for us?
Not nothing publicly. It is, like you said, kind of just say a lot of news, so to speak. Not really being a lot said. I know that in the on the street where they put up the memorial for the young black male.
Yes.
The protesters was gathering there every night. The police started to harass and arrest the people that was gathering out there. Even it was alderman from a different district that was out there, a white man. He got through to the ground and arrested as well one of the days.
So the police threw him to the ground. Just want to make that clear.
I'm sorry?
The police threw him to the ground.
Yeah, the police. Okay. The police, not the protesters that was out there. But I do have something very interesting. Now, this is from a very close source. I would say a very, very close source through the family. Mm-hmm. And what the streets are saying is that they shot that boy in the back. And, you know, that's why we're not hearing anything about the video. And then that's why even the white male, Brad Schimmel is his name. I forget his particular position with the police department or whatever, but he basically came out and said they not releasing the video unless it's going to be charges filed or something to that nature. But the streets are saying that he did have a carry concealed license and shot him in the back.
Shot him in the back. That would be a good reason not to release the video, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So
that's what it sounds like to me. They have something to hide.
Yeah, and that's the kind of the feel that you have been getting, you know, around here. But I did want to add, we had just lost a black radio host. I think he did journalism work as well. Mm-hmm. Black male by the name of Eric Vaughn. We just lost him on Thursday this past week. It's the only black talk radio that we have in the morning, so it was kind of like a devastating blow to the city. Mm-hmm. He did. That's where I used to get a lot of my information from in the morning and everything like that.
Okay.
And he was only 58 years old, so I just wanted to put that out there for other black men, you know, just to stay conscious.
Okay, looks like we lost him. He'll probably call back in, but I have to say, see, that is one of the problems that I identified when creating the Black Talk Media Project. What is the project that we're working on? We're working on elevating black voices, independent black voices, primarily in media, using alternative media and whatnot, instead of just complaining about, you know, they didn't board off all of the black radio stations and they're putting this you know, programming on that really doesn't inform the people, and they've eliminated a lot of the local voices, like he was just describing, this black male who he would listen to in the morning, listen to his morning show to get information about what's going on locally. And that's one of the biggest things that we lost with the passage of the 1996 Telecommunications Act, is that we lost a whole lot of local black radio. Or voices, I should say, that would give out the information pertaining to whether it is the social issues or political issues. And that is something that we have to get back. We have to reestablish our own independent media in these areas where we don't have any voices. Pretty much all we have in terms of radio nationally is two voices now. and that is two comedians. You know, Tom Joyner, he tries, I don't think he's ever worked professionally as a comedian, as Steve Harvey has, but he tells a lot of jokes. You know, when I had a plantation job, and I would, you know, go back and forth to work, I would turn on the radio in the mornings, and that's all we got was either Tom Joyner or we would get Steve Harvey. And the third voice that we had was Michael Basden. Now, Michael Basden, man, I used to love that old school hip hop that he would play, because we would listen to him on our way home from work, me and my brother would. And he used to play that old school hip hop, R&B, funk, and what have you. But he also would give voice to the social issues in the community. And he played, I feel like, a tremendous role in helping to get the word out about the Gina Six in Louisiana. That was the six young men who were overcharged, I would say, in an altercation that they had with a white male. And so Michael Basden used his radio show to put out information about that. Now, activist, I haven't spoke to her in a very long time, but she was instrumental in getting the Scott sisters out of prison, who had been wrongfully convicted. I think that was in Mississippi. I believe it was Mississippi, the Scott sisters. I may be mistaken about that. But Nancy Lockhart, you know, who back during that time, I would have her on quite frequently to discuss the Scott sisters case. Well, Michael Basden also brought her on the program to give his audience information about the Scott sisters case. And it was not too long after Sister Nancy had been on his program that I think his contract was either with CBS or ABC Radio. I'm not sure which major corporation it was. I want to say ABC, but they fired him. They killed his program. So we only had three voices, and two of those voices were simply clowns and just clowning online and talking about stuff that really wasn't that important to the community, and talking about dating and celebrities. And when they would talk about politics, it wouldn't be any kind of in-depth constructive. Basically all they were doing is giving you the Democratic talking points or what have you. So it is very important that we reestablish black radio in these communities, and I believe that I have a plan for that through the Black Talk Media Project, using digital radio where we don't have to go beg in the FCC for a license for a station. And plus, terrestrial radio, is that equipment is very, very, very expensive, and I don't even know why people pay that much, you know, for these boards and stuff with the new technology that is out. And so I feel the caller in Milwaukee, that is a huge loss. If you had a black voice there locally coming on in the morning, giving people good information about what's going on locally, that is a great loss. But you know, this is why the Black Talk Media Project was created, not just to do radio on this station and, you know, make it all about the blacktalkradionetwork.com podcast and broadcasting platform, but also to establish these platforms on a local basis. We do have a caller back, I see. Sorry you got dropped. Go ahead with your comments you were sharing.
Oh, yeah, I was just finishing up by saying it's important for us to pay attention to our health. I'm dealing with a major injury, and I do have quote-unquote Obama insurance, but it's insurance for people that doesn't have the necessary funds to take care of themselves. So the standard of care that I'm receiving is very low, and I am suffering through this injury alone. And man, you know, I think that as a black male, man, we don't have time to play. We do not have time to not take advantage of every opportunity that come our way. And thank you for taking the call and letting me be heard.
Oh, you're welcome. If you want to chime back in before we wrap up at 5 o'clock, certainly just buzz back in and I'll get you on air.
Q&AQ is cleared.
Okay, so I do. That is important. I need to do a better job of taking better care of myself as well. I used to be very, very active, played a lot of sports, but I had a serious injury to my spine, and so that prohibits me from playing basketball anymore. But I have taken up walking and things of that nature. But I would admit my diet could be better. Get on a schedule in terms of my eating, because sometimes I will only eat one meal a day. I mean, here it is, 4:15 in the afternoon in North Carolina. I haven't even had not one meal today whatsoever, and I need to get out of that. I need to start eating more healthy and on a schedule instead of just eating whenever I feel like I'm really hungry, my stomach's growling, so I think I'll eat now. I do echo those sentiments. We as black men, and I would say black women too, we do need to take better care of our health. I want to, real quick, there's a couple of stories that I do want to bring to your attention, but real quick, I want to talk about a story about a shooting of a cop here where I am, not too far from where I am, not in the same county, but in the adjoining county, in the same county where they caught the racist terrorist Dylan Roof. No, they actually did catch him in Gaston County. He had entered into our county when he got caught. I believe it was. But anyway, I want to talk about this young black man who is, they're hunting him down right now. They're trying to find him right now. And the police officer was trying to serve a warrant on him. And this was like late at night. And the cop ended up dead. And so there's like a massive manhunt for this young black man. He looked like he might be mixed as well, I'm not sure, but he's highly melanated. I would classify him as black, and he certainly probably classifies himself as black. But what we're hearing is that he shot this cop in the chest. There was some kind of struggle between the cop and this young man, and the cop ended up dead. He died in the hospital, I think, this morning. I'm not sure. He got shot in the chest. And even though he had on body armor or a bulletproof vest, let me go to btrcommunity.com, because I think that's where I posted it in the group for North Carolina news. I believe I did. I posted it there. Let me see. Yes, I did. Now, what I'm looking at is what the sister had to say. She thinks he's in the woods somewhere dead, because she said that they shot him in the back. That's what she's hearing. So let me just pull up this story. It's on a local news outlet, WNCN. It's a CBS affiliate. It says, sister of man accused of killing North Carolina police officer says her brother was shot. It says that what exactly happened just after midnight in Shelby when K-9 officer Tim Brackeen was shot in the line of duty. The officer died at the hospital Monday morning. So that was yesterday morning he died. Shelby police. Yeah, it was Shelby. So he hadn't yet, Dylan Roof, that is, hadn't yet entered into our county. But it was a woman from our county who recognized his car, the tag on his car from the video they had released, and called the police on Dylan Roof. And the police treated him like, he was some kind of celebrity, took him to Burger King and made sure he had a meal before they took him to jail and what have you. So same police department. Shelby police said the investigation is still in the early stages and is ongoing. They know Brackeen went to serve a warrant on 23-year-old Irving Finner when the shooting happened. Now, here's a question that enters into my mind. Why are you trying to serve a warrant at 12 a.m. at night? That just makes what you're trying to do even more dangerous. I would think you would want it to be in the daytime where you can see pretty much, see a lot better than you can in the dark of the night. So I'm like, why is this man trying to serve a warrant at midnight. Why? That don't make sense to me. And it's just like the man who was killed here in my county. What was that man's name? Mr. Allen, I think it was. I can't remember his name. And I'm going to have to go digging around and do some digging on his case to see where it stands. But it was like they call themselves doing a welfare check on this man. He's elderly black man. I think he was a U.S. Naval veteran or something like that. So anyway, he had open heart surgery or something like that, some kind of surgery. So they released him from the hospital and he was at home. And his sister, who lives in another county, saying that she couldn't get in touch with him and they were concerned about him. So they called the police. The police in Gastonia, called the Gastonia police, not the Gaston County, but the city police where he lived. So they gonna wait to about 11:30 that night to do a welfare check on this elderly man. Again, why would you wait in the dark of the night to do stuff like this? And so he didn't come to the door. So the police gonna call the fire department. They end up breaking into the man's back door. And the man, thinking somebody breaking in, had his little .22 pistol in his hand and stepped out into the hallway to see who was breaking in his house. And a cop shot and killed him. So I'm like, why are you trying to call yourself doing a welfare check at that late at night, breaking into somebody's house that late at night? Because they had went there earlier and didn't get an answer when it was still daylight outside. So they're going to come back late at night. If you were going to break in because you was concerned about somebody, maybe you should have did it during the daytime. So that cop is still on desk duty. I do know that. He's not back out on the street. But it's been almost a year. So anyway, I didn't mean to go off on that. It's a lot of stuff going on where I live. But this is just the latest with this cop in Shelby being killed. And I think in Shelby, in that particular county, they even got a billboard that talk about, wait, welcome to Klan country or something like that. So again, North Carolina historically had the most card-carrying Ku Klux Klan members of any state. And I'm telling you, these are some racist, real racist crackers in this state. And that's why we stay strapped. That's why we stay strapped. That's why we carry guns. That's why I've got plenty of ammo. Because you never know. You never know. So anyway, let me continue with this story. So Shelby police is saying the investigation is still in the early stages and ongoing. They said they don't yet have all the answers and they're still searching for Finner, who police say shot Brackeen. Ashley Hamrick said the shooting happened behind her house. Hamrick said she's known Finner for years. Lately, he was staying off and on with his girlfriend at her house. Hamrick said shortly before the shooting, she dropped Finner off a couple of streets away. She said when she got home just after midnight Saturday morning and was parking her car, she heard voices in the backyard. When I got to this fence, I heard him say, "Stop, stop," and I hear two gunshots. The "stop, stop" I heard was Brackeen. I know his voice like the back of my hand. I've known him for a long time, Hamrick said. With the spotlight that hit him, I see Mr. Finner's face. I see him with the gun raised. The third shot hit Officer Brackeen. Now, let me continue on. But WBTV, which is another local station, said that they spoke by phone to a woman who says that she's Finner's sisters. So Crystal Finner, who was out of state, said multiple people who were at the scene early Saturday morning gave her this version of events. "From what I know, my brother had a warrant out for his arrest. The police came out of the bushes. My brother tried to run. The officer shot my brother in the back. My brother returned fire." She said, "He has a bullet in his back. I wouldn't be surprised if he's somewhere in the woods in North Carolina dead." Let me see. Shelby police tell WBTV they don't know if Finner was wounded because they haven't seen him. A police commander said they've heard it both ways, that Finner was shot and that he wasn't shot. Police say because they haven't seen him, they can't confirm which it is. Again, they say the police investigation is ongoing and they don't know if Brackeen fired his weapon? Well, I would think that you can determine that easily by checking his clip. I don't know if he had a revolver. I don't know if he had an automatic, you know, like a 9mm, which takes a clip. I don't know. But I would know, I would be able to tell if somebody fired their weapon, because it was still, if you were there right on the scene and you saw his weapon laying on the ground, if you picked it up, you would be able to smell the gunpowder. You would feel how warm the barrel is or whatnot. So I think they should know by now whether or not he fired his weapon. But that's what's going on. That's all the news that I have, is that they looking for this individual whose sister said that they shot him in the back, and he could be in the woods somewhere dead. So I that's all I know right now. So that's something that's going on here locally in the area that I live in. So all right, so next story that I want to share with you again, if you have any news or commentary, things you would like to share,
tune in. You got two callers and one call.
Okay, sorry about that. Please give us a call. I'm only going to be on air for an hour today, up until 5 o'clock, as I get ready to finish up this podcast report for today. Again, Tando Radio Show won't be on air today, but Code Breakers will be on air live tonight at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, so make sure y'all check them out. But if you have any questions or comments, any news you want to share during this hour, give us a call at 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-POUND. Hit star 6 and 1 to comment on air. The other way is the studio line. That is 704-951-5030. Now, there's a story that I want to share with you, that this is why I say black people should be making a run on the gun store right now. And they should be making the same kind of run that we saw all of these racist suspects, you know, when Barack Obama was elected the first time. And then after he was elected or selected the second time, each time they made runs on the gun store, buying up guns and ammo. We should be doing the same thing right now, in my opinion, instead of falling behind this logic that says that when you behind enemy lines, you should be unarmed because guns are bad and we don't, you know, we need to ban guns or limit their availability and all of that. Well, I'm not one of those people. Again, I'm surrounded by racist suspects, potential terrorists, and I'm not thinking that if one of these people want to try to commit an act of terrorism against me or anyone else in this community, that the police gonna come and save me. You know, you better have means to defend yourself. But you got this Kentucky governor who's telling racist suspects that they may have to turn to physical violence, and talking about shit and blood and all of that. So this is a story that was shared with me by the host of, I just produced their program earlier today, Change Matters Solution. Kenny Hendricks, one of the hosts of Change Matters Solution. They had an excellent program this morning. Check out the podcast when you get a chance. But he sent me this about an hour ago, this article from the Huffington Post. Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin says conservatives may have to turn to physical violence. Kentucky Governor, this is an article that was written by Sam Levine. Again, he's writing for the Huffington Post here. He says Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin, a Republican, said on Saturday that conservatives may have to turn to physical violence to protect their values. I want us to be able to fight ideologically, mentally, spiritually, economically, so that we don't have to do it physically, Bevin said during his speech at the Values Voter Summit in Washington. But that may, in fact, be the case. Bevin went on to say that he believed the United States would survive a Hillary Clinton presidency, but it might require bloodshed. The roots of the tree of liberty are watered by what? The blood of who? The tyrants, to be sure, but who else? The patriots, he said. Whose blood will be shed? It may be that of those in this room. It might be that of our children and grandchildren. I have 9 children. It breaks my heart to think that it might be their blood that is needed to redeem something, to reclaim something that we, through our apathy and our indifference, have given away. Don't let it happen. So, you know, to me, this is coming off as fear, white fear of genetic annihilation. This is what they think. They think they're losing their power, and so, you know, they turn. Well, when have they not always been turning to violence and whatnot? We've heard this kind of talk before, but I take it very serious. I do not take this as, oh, he just running his mouth, telling them people what they want to hear and blah, 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 blah. No, I take these people at their word. This is a governor, just like you got that sheriff there in Wisconsin, Milwaukee, we was talking about earlier, who said that Black Lives Matter protesters are scum that need to be eradicated, and said that there's a war being waged and that they are the enemy and they need. I take these people serious. Y'all can take them as a joke. Y'all can take it as just empty talk or empty rhetoric or what have you. I'm not. I'm taking these people very, very serious. So now we got a governor. We got a governor telling white folks that they gonna have to turn to violence in order to reclaim their country. That's what he's talking about, to reclaim their country. And we're losing this, and our indifference and our apathy have allowed our white power to be eroded and what have you. Now there's a black president. Obviously, I'm being, you know, sarcastic here, but that's what I'm hearing from him. That's what I'm hearing from him. And you know what? I agree with him, though. I agree with him, but not in the context of what he's talking about. I have said on this station, and I'll keep saying on this station, it may just take bloodshed to end slavery in this country once and for all. We may need to have another civil war to finally rid ourselves of the scourge of modern day slavery in this country, because it is a fact that the tyrants who wrote the Constitution put in the 13th Amendment after the Civil War that they put an exception clause in the 13th Amendment and then told everybody a lie that that amendment is ending slavery. But it's got an exception clause in it. You actually capitulated, or maybe that was the plan all along, but you capitulated to the Confederates. You gave them exactly what they wanted, and that was the ability to continue practicing slavery, just in a different format. So I take these people at their word, and I'm in agreement with him. People's liberty and freedom, primarily black folks, non-white folks, and then poor white folks even, end up on these prison plantations to be the modern day slaves for these corporations. So I agree with him. With all of this enslavement going on, and it seems to be no end in sight, despite the progress we've been making politically and getting the DOJ to say that it's going to cancel their upcoming contracts with private prisons. But I know the next CEO of USA Inc. can easily reverse that policy, unless that bill is passed that actually bans private prisons and whatnot. But again, I'm here to tell you, I'm under no illusion. It may take violence. It may take bloodshed in order for us to end slavery. Now, but we got these people like Sheriff Clark up there in Milwaukee, like Governor Matt Bevin of Kentucky, sitting up here talking this talk. You need to take these people serious. And black folks need to stop buying into this silly notion that the only way for us to achieve our goals is through nonviolence. How is that the case? And then again, I don't mean to go off on a tangent here, but now I'm reminded that every Sunday when they do them military jet flyovers of these NFL games, you know, since everybody, not everybody, but a lot of these racist suspects is all bent out of shape because more and more athletes are taking a knee during the national anthem. But I was just thinking about that. That whole display is a celebration of violence. But they don't even want, even when, but they want us to always be nonviolent. But even when we're nonviolent, they got something to say about that. These are evil people. They don't believe in practicing justice. They are a scourge on the planet. And it may just take bloodshed to get rid of them. It just may. It took a civil war the first time to try to end slavery. But again, you had that lying lawyer by the name of Abraham Lincoln capitulating to the Confederacy, keeping his promise to him that he never intended to end slavery in this country. And he did not. So I'm telling everybody out there that believe in liberty, justice, and freedom for all, who think that slavery is about the worst institution on the face of the planet. It is the worst institution on the face of this planet. I'm telling you that we may have to shed some blood in order to end this. So I ain't seeing nothing any different than this governor, but I'm just saying in a different context. So he was asked by Lexington Herald leader to clarify his comments. Bevin said he was talking about military service. Oh, so now he's getting codified. When he was talking to what he thought behind the doors and to these racist suspects and, you know, having a fireside chat. Oh, he wasn't codified then. He was speaking in no uncertain terms that they want to take up arms and kill people. So now he want to try to be codified. He going to say, today we have thousands of men and women in uniform fighting for us overseas, and they need our full backing, he said in a statement. We cannot be complacent about the determination of radical Islamic extremists to destroy our freedoms, nor can we allow apathy and indifference to allow our culture to crumble from within. Well, again, you are a representative of a state that still practices slavery. So again, when these people start talking about, they think like the so-called quote-unquote founding fathers. See, when the founding fathers wrote the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, those only applied to white males. So that's what he's thinking now. That's what he's thinking, destroying the freedom of white males to terrorize anybody at will. That's what he wants. That's what he want. But see, when it comes to the freedom of non-white people, oh, our freedoms don't exist. He doesn't care about that. But I'm here to tell you, that these people are evil, and I'm going to go biblical on you. By their fruits, you will know them. You will know them by the words that come out of their mouth, and that'll show you what's in their heart. What's in these people's heart is racism, slavery, and murder. So y'all can sit up there and play dumb and play like somebody is coming to save you and is going to protect you. Keep waiting. You better be going out making the same kind of gun runs that these people been making over the last 8 years and stocking up on ammo, and not only that, learning how to shoot. Like I've taught my daughters how to shoot. So keep thinking that. Keep thinking these people are no joke. They are not to be taken lightly. Let me see if there's anything else. I do want to take a short station identification break, and I'll hit some of these other news stories today. But I'm serious. I take these people at their word. They mean what they say. I don't think they're playing. I don't think they're saying what they're saying just for laughs and giggles. These people are serious. So I want to take a station identification break. Do want to remind you about a new online social experience for black people. And you can find that online at btrcommunity.com. It is a social media platform that has been put up by the Black Talk Media Project, the North Carolina-based nonprofit that also manages the BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com platform. And you can help us towards our vision of building these independent black media stations in communities that look like us, that we want to target with the information that they need. All right. And you can do that by just simply doing something you're already doing, and that is using social media. Except for with this social media platform, there is a subscription. It isn't a whole lot, just $24 a year or $5 a month or $1 a week. You know, not a whole lot of money, all right? We're talking about pennies, really, in the grand scheme of things. So, but we want to use that as a way to fund our media operations. So that will preclude us from having to go to any of these organizations like George Soros has, or go to the U.S. government and say, please, can I get a grant to do independent black media and build this network for black folks all over this country, this media network, so we fund it ourselves. We fund it ourselves. Marcus Garvey did it. The Nation of Islam did it. Other black people engaged in the same sort of behavior and funded their own activities. It is only of late, I would say since the 1970s, maybe the 80s, that you now have these white organizations as well as the U.S. government providing funds to nonprofits. But don't think that those funds don't come with any strings attached, because they certainly do. All right. So just want to remind you, BTRCommunity.com. Please join it. Tell other people about it. It is a safe digital space for black people. We will not be running any kind of data mining operations. I was just reading an article about Facebook today about why you should take your phone number off of Facebook, because they're using it to suggest other people. I'll read the article when we come back. But yeah, we need to do this. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. We'll be back on the other side.
No, I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses. All right, welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. The telephone numbers, again, we will be on air for about another 17 minutes so I can wrap up the podcast report that I need to get out to our donors to the Black Talk Media Project. But the telephone number is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-POUND. Hit star 6 and 1 to comment. Or you can hit us up on the studio line. That is 704-951-5030. Next story I want to share with you, since I was just talking about why, one of the reasons why we set up btrcommunity.com, but I do have to give credit to David, the host of Tando Radio Show, because he did put the ideal into my mind when he said we need to get off of Facebook. We need our own platform, because, you know, we can't have secure communications with each other on their platform. But anyway, here is an article that was published today by Fortune.com. On Fortune.com, it says Facebook forces choice between convenience and privacy every day. Says a few weeks ago, a disturbing article by Kashmir Hill at digital media site Fusion.
It is a big day for basketball as Anton Miller is getting ready to.
Y'all, excuse me. Y'all know how some of these sites just start up ads automatically. So let me continue. Again, this is on Fortune.com. It is posted in the BTRCommunity.com platform. Most people don't give it a second thought. A few weeks ago, a disturbing article by Cashmere Hill at digital media site Fusion prompted me to remove my phone number from Facebook account. The article describes the way Facebook may be using your phone's address book to recommend new friends to other users. How the hell is they getting in your phone's address book with just your phone number? Is there something going on with Facebook that I don't know about? How can they get access to your phone's address book by you just simply putting your phone? I'll have to go find that original article and read it. So anyway, this guy continues to say, he continues to write, like many well-meaning tech product features, this seems innocent enough until you encounter examples where it's not. In this case, Facebook was recommending a psychiatrist's patients add one another as friends, possibly because they all had the psychiatrist's phone number as a contact, even though none of them were even friends with her on Facebook. Now, this is getting interesting. I didn't think about this when I first read this. So again, I'm sure these people are not putting their psychiatrist's phone numbers on their Facebook profiles. I doubt very much they even want anybody knowing that they seeing a psychiatrist. So how in the hell are they doing this with your phone number? How are they getting access? I know. I just thought about it. This must be people using the Facebook app on their mobile phones. That's how they're getting access to your phone book on your mobile phone. That's the only way. They have to be data mining your smartphone. That's the only way. Because how else are you going to how else are they going to know that these people have the same psychiatrist's phone number in their phones, in their phone book? I'm assuming it has to be in their phones, right? The only way is through Facebook apps that people have downloaded to access Facebook on their smartphone. That is the only way possible that they could data. Oh my goodness. See, this is even deeper than what I first recognized when I briefly read over it the first time. Let me continue. So let me back up. Let me read that again. Like many well-meaning tech product features, this seems innocent enough until you encounter examples where it's not. In this case, Facebook was recommending a psychiatrist's patients add one another as friends, possibly because they all had the psychiatrist's phone number as a contact, even though none of them were even friends with her on Facebook. They have to be data mining these people's numbers in their phone books and their phones. And the only way they could do that is through that Facebook app. Since I've removed my phone number every single time I open the Facebook app on my smartphone, I get a message asking me to add it back for security purposes. In fine print, to find friends and get alerts too. I can't permanently opt out. I will continue to get this prompt until Facebook badgers me enough that I give up and add it back. It's a grim reminder that with all of the amazing, wonderful free web products, and I wrote about this, is free social media actually free when you paying with your privacy? No, that's not free. It's not free. Okay? They data mining, they all in your private messages, and now they all up in your phone book on your phone, and this dude still ain't caught on to it. He must not be that tech savvy, because they cannot get access to your phone book simply by you putting your phone number in the app. The app has to be data mining your address book in your phone for it to do that. So this guy still ain't even caught on. He thinks that him simply adding a telephone number in there is how they are. You see, that only makes sense. He ain't thinking right. He ain't thinking straight. The app has to be gaining access to your phone book on your smartphones in order for them to know that, hey, these people on Facebook all share the same psychiatrist. Hey, let's recommend friends, recommend to each of one of them, since they share the same psychiatrist, to be friends with each other on Facebook. Man, this is... Again, I'm not trying to scare anybody. I'm just trying to relay what is going on. Like I stated yesterday, I ain't telling you to abandon Facebook, but I'm telling you to watch what you post on Facebook, to, especially if you're an activist, especially if you are engaged in counter racism and you're coordinating with other people to meet up here or do an organizational meeting and all this planning. And then also, and I've noticed this with people will post their location. They will post their location on Facebook. I'm going here, I'm going there, I'm at this place, I'm at that place. And some of that is just too much information to be putting out on a platform we know that the FBI has been using to track activists and what have you. Just wake up, people, wake up. And I promise you, on btrcommunity.com, we are not running any kind of data mining. We are not going in your private messages so that we can see what type of food you like or whatever you're talking about, so we can come up with some ads to target you, because we don't have ads and will not put ads on the network. That is solved by the subscription fee, the very small subscription fee. Then we don't have to do data mining so we can serve up ads to people and make money from advertisers. Because, you know, my thing is that most people, most of these corporations, unless we're involved in something negative like playing murder music on the public radio stations or what, they're not going to advertise with us. You don't hear any Coca-Cola ads, not that I would accept them, on this station. You don't hear that kind of stuff, because they ain't interested in the promotion of truth to people. So that's very troubling right there. That's very, very troubling. Data mining your cell phone's address book from that app. Mm-mm-mm. Next story. This kind of goes to what I was saying earlier about that governor's comments, the Kentucky governor's comments telling these racist suspects that the tree of liberty has to be watered with blood, and the blood of tyrants and the blood of patriots. Man, these people again keep calling for war. But anyway, here is an article that I came across of this racist suspect talk with his Black Rifles Matter sign. So this is a report from NBC News. Let me cue up this video. May play an ad first, so I may have to mute that, but bear with me as the page loads up. But you got this guy who has a sign on his property that's triggering outrage. And be honest with you, this is the kind of stuff they be looking for you to get outraged about. It's his property, it's his land. If he want to put up a sign of a M16 talking about black guns matter or what have you, what is that to get all bent out of shape about? I'm not, man, sometimes we give our energy to stuff that ain't even worth it. So, let's go ahead and run this report from NBC News about this story.
Guns are my thing.
Using his First Amendment rights to speak out about the Second.
And that's a real trigger for me, is the assault weapons ban.
Link Sample is a licensed firearms dealer in Boothbay Harbor, Maine, and painted this sign on his property.
It really is all about kind of pushing the narrative a little bit.
It reads, Black Rifles Matter, a take on the Black Lives Matter movement about police brutality.
They're being targeted because of their appearance? Fair enough. So's my rifle.
He says this isn't about race, and Black Lives Matter protesters shouldn't be offended by his use of the slogan.
If anything, they ought to be flattered that I used the phrase.
Basically bastardizing the Black Lives Matter slogan to use for guns.
The director of the Chamber of Commerce says it's free speech, but not free of consequences.
It has rubbed some people the wrong way.
Rick Prose has been hearing from offended tourists. Some have even cut their vacation short because of it.
He's certainly entitled to voice his opinion.
The town manager has also heard complaints, but says with a proper permit and First Amendment protection,
there isn't much that the town can do about it. It
certainly does offend some people.
Tourists we spoke with either love it or hate it.
People are ignorant. They shouldn't be putting things out like that.
I think they're doing the right thing.
The sign owner says some people are seeing the sign but missing the point.
This is all about firearms rights. That's all it's about.
And I certainly understand exactly where he's coming from. See, these is white liberals who are anti-gun to begin with. They ain't never wanted black people to own guns, period, in this country, going back to the 1600s in the slave codes when they first put into codification, into law, that free black colonists could not own firearms. They never wanted us to have the means to protect ourselves. And so, you know, he can, look, Black Lives Matter ain't nothing but a slogan. Don't nobody own it. I say black radio stations matter. Why? Because we have so very few of them. And we getting all this bad information from these pseudo black radio stations. Not real black radio stations. Just got black people talking on the radio stations, but they don't run nothing. So I say black radio stations matter. We even got a t-shirt. Make a $25 donation, we'll give you a free Black Radio Stations Matter t-shirt to benefit our nonprofit and our mission to create black media. Now again, I'm not one of those anti-gun folks. I grew up with guns. So my grandfather used to have a gun in just about every corner of the house. A shotgun, a Winchester rifle, 22s, guns everywhere. Guns everywhere. I grew up around guns. I grew up using guns. I taught my children how to use guns. They're not children now. And I'm not one of those fools. I live deep behind enemy lines. I am under no illusion that if a terrorist attack occurred on our household, like they tried to do back in the 60s when they burned the cross in my grandfather's yard, and then attempted to burn down the house. But guess what? Black rifles mattered that night as my uncles came out with their black rifles and chased the cowards off down the freaking road, and they never came back. They never messed with us again. Black rifles do matter. So people want to take that. And again, this is mostly white people. I ain't seen nobody black interviewed in this piece. I don't know if even black people even live in that town. But here is a case of white liberals who are anti-gun trying to make this an issue about race when it ain't an issue about race. It's an issue about gun rights. It's an issue about gun ownership. As I was talking about the African-American Museum of History and Culture that will open soon in Washington, D.C., if it hasn't opened already, I was asking questions about will it have any exhibits pointing out the fact that black muskets, I don't know what they was using back then, we call them rifles, muskets, but black muskets mattered to in the American Revolutionary War. Without those black muskets, America wouldn't exist as a nation today. They would have lost to the British without those black muskets. Okay? Civil War. The Union would have lost to the Confederacy if it was not for black rifles mattering. Whether they were the black rifles of free black people or enslaved victims of slavery who had escaped. That those black rifles made a difference in putting down the rebellion. The only thing is that you had a racist white supremacist as president who never cared about ending slavery. And in his letters to the Congressman Stevens of Georgia, he told him, please tell them crackers down there that I ain't trying to mess with the institution of slavery and blah, blah, blah. I mean, but those black guns mattered in deciding who won that war. Unfortunately, their sacrifice was in vain as they were betrayed by the commander-in-chief, Abraham Lincoln, who deserved that bullet he got in the back of the head. All right? He deserved it. He was a freaking traitor. He should have been marched out in front of a firing squad, but, you know, the Lord works in mysterious ways, and he got a bullet to the back of his brain for his treachery. So black guns matter. I'm so sick of some black people and then white liberals want to bring race into this stuff when it comes to gun ownership in this country. Don't y'all buy into that. Martin Luther King and them had a nonviolent protest and demonstrations that was a strategy. They were using mostly children and young students. They wanted it to be caught on film, these defenseless black people getting attacked by these vicious white terrorist mobs and by the police as well. They wanted those images. But Dr. King in his own household had plenty of guns. He had plenty of guns. But see, you're constantly manipulated through media, and they paint this image of him just being this, you know, he was so against violence and he didn't think black folks should use guns to defend themselves. And that's nothing further than from the truth. If that was the case, he wouldn't allow the Deacons for Defense to provide armed security for his very last march, which was the March Against Fear. See, this is a case of white liberals trying to manipulate the emotions of black people and point at something and claim this white man's being racist when he ain't even talking about black people. He ain't talking about the issues that he talking about gun rights in this country. That's what he talking about. So, you know, context is important. People can't just read a sign and get all reactionary and whatever. And I mean, I remember on Time for Awakening Radio that comes on the program that we air on this network on Sundays at 7 o'clock, they had a guest. There is a Facebook page called Black Guns Matter, which is run by a black person. And he was interviewed by Brother Elliot on Time for Awakening about maybe 3 weeks ago, I want to say. You could check the archives, the podcast for Time for Awakening, and you'll be able to find that interview. So, you know, I mean, come on, please. They trying to make an issue where there is no issue. This ain't got nothing to do with race or racism. Has to do with gun ownership. He just simply saying black rifles matter in support of not only his own individual rights, but in support of his business, because he is a gun dealer. So he does have an interest in not seeing his business destroyed by Democrats who ain't got a problem with using violence against non-white people all over the planet. But then when it come to us protecting ourselves, oh, we supposed to be, you know, defenseless and all of that. So don't fall for that okey-doke garbage. Don't fall for the manipulation. Last story. Let me see. Last story is a bit of history I want to share with you. This is kind of related to what I was just talking about. There was on the Real Grown Folks page on Facebook, there was a post called Never Forget the Red Summer, White Terrorism on Black America. The Red Summer of 1919, when white people went on a killing spree across America from Charleston to Omaha to Chicago against a besieged black community who tried to defend themselves. Let's go ahead and give a listen to this video. The bloody summer of 1919.
Mrs. Moore has fond memories of her youth, but that was not always the reality for Negroes in Omaha or the nation as a whole. The end of World War I brought on a lot of change. The enlisted men were returning home. Government spending on arms was winding down. Competition for work became fierce. For the first time, whites had to compete with blacks for jobs. Whites turned their anger and frustration on black neighborhoods, spreading terror and fear nationwide. Many were killed. The year was 1919, and it was the bloodiest summer ever between the races. Omaha was not spared its measure of violence. That September, a white woman, Agnes Lobeck, accused a black packing house worker, Will Brown, of rape. He was arrested, held and questioned by police in the Douglas County Jail. Out on the street, a mob of angry men demanded Brown be handed over to them. The police refused. The mob then set fire to the jail. As officers battled the flames, the mob stormed in and drug Brown out to the street below. By now, the mob had grown to several thousand. Omaha Mayor Ed Smith tried to stop them, but the vigilantes turned their rage on him. The mayor narrowly escaped being lynched and was cut down in time to save his life. Brown was not so lucky. He was shot hundreds of times. Then his body was hung from a light pole. The body was dragged through the streets of downtown Omaha. Finally, it was torched and burned. By morning, the city was placed under martial law. Troops were posted along the streets to prevent further outbreaks of violence. The riot was confined to the courthouse and parts of downtown. However, its impact extended deep into the black community.
And I remember the humiliation. I remember that I was ashamed. I can remember the fear among the people of the North, and it was a fear for all of us. There wasn't too many of the black children in high school at that time, so for a couple of days, most of us stayed away. We were very ashamed, very ashamed.
Why were you ashamed?
Well, you know, when you're 14, when things like that kind of shock you, and you can't believe this, that they can do anything, and then it kind of strikes you for maybe the first time that because your color, that kind of does something to you. That kind of does something to you. It always did, and it always has, and still does.
All right, that's the end of that. What I'm getting from this elder, who was 14 years old at the time, and she's saying that we were ashamed. They probably was ashamed that their parents couldn't protect them. They probably was ashamed that terrorists can just terrorize black people at will. And there's no protection. No protection whatsoever. None. Again, as you could tell, look, they had to wait for the National Guard to come in and set up to stop these white terrorists from further terrorizing. Look, these people so vicious and evil. They so vicious and evil that they were going to lynch a white man for trying to stop them from lynching a black man. They actually did lynch him. They had to cut him down in order to save his life. This is how vicious and evil these people are. Some of these people still walking around, still alive. These sound like the grandparents or the parents of people like that governor in Kentucky. This is who these people are. They still have that mindset. Now, anything like this ever happens again, you should be ashamed of yourself. You should be ashamed of yourself that you're not able to defend your family because you want to follow behind some Democratic ideology about gun control and all of that crap. When you live deep behind enemy lines and your enemy is armed to the teeth. And then you expect the very racist government that we are protesting against to come in and save us? That's insane. Better go buy some guns and make them and make your black life matter. Guns and ammo will make your black life matter. And if it don't, if it can't save you, at least you can take out a couple of terrorists with you and they won't be around to terrorize nobody else. When you show fear, the enemy feeds off of that fear. As she said, oh, they were just so fearful. Everybody was so fearful. I'm going to go biblical on y'all again. God didn't give us the spirit of fear. He gave us the spirit of love and power. We got the love part down to a fault. Where's the power? Black people, wake up. Wake up. Nobody's going to give you anything. We're going to have to take our freedom. We're going to have to free the slaves. And through our actions, we will say that black lives matter just as much as anybody else's. That's my program for today. Again, just to give you an update on network news for today, Tando Radio Show is off air this week as David has some family matters to take care of. But coming up at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, that would be 8 Central and 8 Central. So that would be 6 Pacific Standard Time. But Code Breakers will be on tonight discussing counter-racism in this racist system. So make sure y'all show your support for those young brothers on Code Breakers tonight. Also, if you get an opportunity, check out the podcast of Change Matters Solution, which was on this morning at 11 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time as they come on every Tuesday morning. Excellent program. They had a guest from the NAACP. Just an excellent conversation was had. So I think that information that they were sharing in the conversation was constructive. So if you have a chance, check out that podcast. And by all means, please share, tell other people about BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. Because I hear, you know, from some of our donors and stuff, and they were saying, you know, I was so blessed to find Black Talk Radio. You know, I just really was getting sick of the talk radio, the Black Talk Radio that we hear on the terrestrial radio stations, and I was just about to give up when I came across Black Talk Radio on the internet talking about our platform, and they have become donors and whatnot. I had one donor tell me that I was giving a donation to National Public Radio, NPR, and she was like, when I found out about Black Talk Radio, now I make my donation to the Black Talk Media Project. So tell other people about us. We are growing. We are making an impact. But we can make an even bigger impact if we just put our pennies and dollars together. So with that said, y'all be safe out there. I'm not just saying we live behind enemy lines just to be saying something. I mean that. They still practicing slavery. There are extrajudicial killings happening every day in the streets. And so, just, you know, I am a praying person. I do believe in prayer. But, like the Bible says, all of that ain't worth a darn if you don't do the work, if you don't put no work to it. Faith without works is dead. I can believe all day long that God is going to protect me from these vicious white terrorists, but guess what? I got to put in the work. I can have faith that he's going to protect me, but I got to have put in the work. And then what's the work? The work is actually having the means and the will to defend myself by any means necessary. And may the Lord make my aim true. You know, that what we see in the movies, these racist suspects talking about praying, God, make me shoot straight so I can kill the enemy and all of that. Yeah, I believe in that kind of praying. Certainly do. But people need to wake up and stop thinking that you live in the best country on the face of the planet with all these problems that's going on. Primarily the fact that they still practicing slavery. But defend yourself at all times, but do not live in fear. Do not live in fear. Fear will paralyze. It'll do one of two things. It'll paralyze you and make you easy prey, or it will cause you to act. That's the good kind of fear, the fear that causes you to act to preserve your life. The bad kind of fear is the kind of fear that paralyzes you and say, oh, I can't protect myself. It's just too many of these crackers. I can't do nothing. You know what I'm saying? Look, my grandfather and his family survived deep behind these enemy lines. They tried to run them off the land, tried acts of terrorism. They refused to go. They refused to go. And they let it be known that they will kill you. That's what these people understand. They don't understand nothing else. That's what they understand. So with that said, y'all be safe out here, but don't allow yourself to be overtaken by fear. That said, peace and blessings to all.